Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, folks. I want to welcome everybody to the top of the hour here with Blog Talk Radio. You know, we are having a blast. Today, it's just gorgeous down here at the beach. And if any of you, I mean, you almost have to be living under a rock not to know we've had an oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. But the cool thing about this is that, you know what, except for right at the spillhead where it's on the Barrier Islands in Louisiana, and it's starting to come ashore, overall, it is not bad. It could have been substantially worse than where it's at right now. And that's what excites me, is that we have truly, all along the Gulf of Mexico, been blessed. So if you're in a position where you need to take a vacation, you want to come down and check out the beaches, I'm telling you, you need to come down, hang out, and have some fun, because we are rocking. But we're in Chapter 7, The Big Rut. We're doing predictable success, and this has been a phenomenal book. Les McCune is an international businessman, 42 different businesses worldwide. And if you've not been with us through the whole series, some of it may not get it. And I challenge you to go to predictablesuccess.com, see how this can actually work, whether you're at the corporate levels of a corporation, especially in direct selling, or whether you're in the field. Because this has made a big difference in the way I viewed things. I've actually made some notes, put a new coaching deal together for my clients, because I believe this can help people. But listen to this story that Les starts out with. It was the second time in my career that I'd been led to a client's offices by the nose. Once, years previously, I'd been at the doubtful pleasure of auditing the books of a massive tire company. Well, we all know what the smell of rubber is. This time, he's in England. And he's at a wonderful chocolate factory. And he's excited. He says, you know, I guess the inhabitants of this small town in northern England had gotten used to this over the years. But to a new visitor, the odor, together with the dominant shape of the candy processing, was just magnificent. It was truly a factory town. But this is the fun part. Listen to this. I pulled into the large but strangely unpopulated parking lot and stepped out of the car to be confronted by an imposing granite building. Now think about that. That's almost like one of those old Mason buildings of the old days, or maybe you're in Washington and you see all these monuments. I walked towards the sculptured archways in front of the massive double doors. As I reached for the ironwork door handle the size of a man's head, I saw a sheet of paper taped at eye level behind the rain-splattered protective sheets. Listen to this. Visitors, please use the side entrance. Deliveries, the rear. The main doors, as splendid as they were, had not been open for decades. Now think about this before I go on for a second. What about your own business? How many businesses, how many people in your organization, how many office doors maybe in your corporate offices have not been opened in a decade? When you look at your sheets, how many clients' doors have not been opened for decades? See, this is what you've got to look at. Now listen to this. This gets better. 20 minutes later, I was sitting in an anti-room adjacent to what appeared to be a massive dining hall. He was just sitting, waiting, kind of like a lobby, waiting to see the three family members that a mutual friend had recommended meet me. From what I knew of this once nationally loved business, over the decades, it had shrunk to its current position. that was the craziest thing I've ever seen. All the power just went flip. It was gone. You know, that's what happens when you got 14 million people down here at the beach, I guess, and it's about the time for, what do we call it, 4th of July. So, hey, we got dead space. That's something that you hate when that happens, but, hey, we had that happen. Anyway, where we were at was Les was sharing about this big, gigantic chocolate factory, and here he is. He's walked into the lobby through the side door, and he can see into this big adjacent room, looks like a dining room where people are going to sit. And he's waiting for people, and out of the blue, he hears this deep voice, hey, why don't you please come and join us? You know, a little bit shocked, he turned around and because he hadn't heard anybody come into the room, and as he looked, he realized that way down at the end of this table were three people. And basically what he thought had been a dining room was one of the largest, most elegant boardrooms he'd ever seen. These three folks that are family members, brothers and sisters, invite him to sit at the far end of the actual boardroom table. Nobody but them and him at the other end. And it's amazing because as he shares this story, he asked them the questions. He said, you know, I know that James, our friend, has told me that I need to be here and that possibly that we might be able to do some business. I can help you with your business, we can consult. And they look at him kind of strangely. And they say, we don't have any problems with our business. He said, well, let me ask you real quick. You know, you're down to just two products. Does that not bother you? They said, well, we've been selling those two products since 1908. He goes, okay, but what about, you know, your deliveries, the people that are your customers and stuff? He goes, they don't complain. When we make a delivery, they buy it. And very quickly, he looks and realizes with frustration that maybe they don't need his help. And he asked them the point-blank question, is there anything that I can do for you? And after a pause and them looking at each other, they say, no, we think we've gotten everything that we need. And as he walked out of the door, he turned to the oldest brother and said, can I ask why you even met with me? And the sister answered and said, well, really the reason we met with you is because we always figure that we can learn something from an outside perspective, and we've learned that we're doing everything right. Now, see, this is what happens when you get into a rut, especially the big rut. And if you know anything about the predictable success life cycle, if you overshoot predictable success and you start moving towards the downhill side, towards the death rattle, once you get into the big rut, it's hard to get out of it. See, there's so many companies out there, not just in network marketing, but across the gamut, across the board, where they've gotten themselves in trouble. They have become complacent. We see this happen a lot with second and third generation companies. I've seen it, sadly, even in network marketing and direct sales, where the children or the grandchildren take over the business. And because there's so much cash sitting there, and because there's so much that they can just leave at the status quo, they don't change anything, and all of a sudden they wonder what happened to our teams, what happened to our leaders. And because they built it on strong products and strong services, they don't even realize that they're going downhill until it's too late, because most of the time the actual customers are still there. It's just the distributors that have left. Les describes it this way. He says the big rut is the sixth. And really the worst stage in any organization's development, coming after early struggle, after we've hit the fun stages, we've hit white water, gotten a little crazy, but then we moved right on into predictable success. Even at the treadmill section where we overshot, we didn't quite get there. Now we're at that big rut. Listen to what Les says here. I think think about this before I go on. Think about this for a second. You've got a network marketing organization. You're making, you know, let's say you're making $10,000, $15,000 a month. You're happy. You've got a lot of people on your team doing $5,000, $3,000, $2,000 a month. You haven't seen growth in maybe a couple, 3 years. Matter of fact, it's even challenging to you now because you're not having fun. Listen to what Les says here. Once your organization reaches the big rut stage in development, the organization has lost any desire to be creative or to take risk, and it instead solely focuses on maintaining and marginally improving how it's done business in the past. This is important. Listen. When in big rut, there is a belief on the part of the management team, the way we're doing things is okay. It is to continue maintaining the status quo. Now, here it comes. The key factor of the organization in the big rut is not customers, but it's focused on itself. See, when we're in the fun stage, we're focused on going out there and attracting customers, going out there and attracting new distributors, going out there and spreading the message of what it is we're about. I remember in 1982 when Guy Kiyosaki was the chief evangelist for Apple Computers. They were on a quest. I remember by the late 80s when Guy had gone on his way and Steve Jobs had been kicked out of the company. That company was into treadmill. It was actually on its way into the big rut when Steve Jobs was called back into that company to take the helm. Believed so much in what he was doing, he refused to take a salary. He said, I will bet my financial future on the stock of this company. And by the way, I want a jet so I can fly around and see people. But he did what most companies couldn't do. He brought it out of that big rut factor to making it the dominant player in communications today when it comes to hardware. It's amazing to see what he's done. You see, a lot of people look at Apple Computer. I find this humorous, and they try to compare them to Microsoft. And see, what people misunderstand is that Apple isn't in the software business. Apple is in the appliance business. They provide the appliances so that people can use the software. He did what most companies couldn't do. He turned it from the inward focus to the outward focus. He started going back after the customers. He started looking around and saying, what is it they want? Oh, they want free downloads. Oh, they want Raspbian C or whatever it's called. Oh, wow, that's good. Oh, look what we can do. And then what did he do? He said, we can do it better. Do you realize that before the iPod came along, we had this thing called an MP3 player? And everybody would go around and say, hey, you got your MP3 player? Hey, what MP3 player do you have? Well, I have an iRiver, or I have a Samsung, or I have this. Do you realize just in a very few years that the words MP3 player kind of disappeared? Now everybody says, hey, you got an iPod? Whether it's an iPod or not, it's called an iPod. Folks, listen to what this is. This is, if you're at the beginning stages of the big rut, you can get out of this. And here's how you're going to know if you're falling into this. This is key here. Listen, number one, key personnel will leave. We saw what happened. Apple, in Steve Jobs' case, he was kicked out as the CEO of the company. But how many times have you seen this happen? Matter of fact, Jimmy and I were very close in a company. He was in the company. I had taken a position, never did anything with it. We had great friends there. And we did not pay attention to the signs. This company had entered big rut. They wanted things status quo. And literally from the CEO on down, they were all making some good money. It was inward focused. It wasn't really outward focused, especially at the top levels. And all of a sudden, key personnel started to leave. Nobody picked up on the signs. See, when this happens, that's the first sign of it. And it's scary. Because there, a lot of the times, are the visionaries behind how the company had originally reached predictable success. Think about this for a minute. When your upline leaves after telling you how powerful the company is, after building such great relationships with the founders, they start to leave. There's got to be a reason. A second way that you can tell this is that the creativity, the risk-taking, the vision is dead. In this company that I'm talking about, it got so bizarre that they ended up going to just a single product years after they had created a name for themselves with some top products that should have stayed on the shelf, should have been used. As a matter of fact, I'm using a couple of them right now. Should have been a sign, but we didn't see it. Well, now we're doing this training on it so that you guys can start seeing it in your organization. I can think of another company, well, several, where the leaders have left the company. Field leaders. And you look around and you realize, well, man, the company's not done anything. And then you run and you say, you know what? It looked like they were in predictable success. And then I swear they got into the treadmill section and they did. And oh, my gosh, it looked like they were headed to the big rut. But then what did they do? They reinvented themselves. Richard Brooke and OxyFresh come to mind. They've got this new 2110 brand that they're bringing out. They have, totally blown away their field force. And you talk about momentum and excitement. See, every now and then you see this happen. I remember BK when New Vision was kicking it up and they were he could go anywhere he wanted to. He'd go out to Fiji with Tony Robbins. He was hanging out with Robert Kiyosaki. But he knew there was something missing, and he created this new brand called Vima. All of a sudden, just exploded. They brought new generation to the company. Folks, this is what you see when somebody understands, whoops, wait a minute, we're slipping past that predictable success. We got to move back a little bit. A third thing that can be a benchmark or a flag for you to realize this is happening is that the interest in the customer is replaced by navel-gazing. By the way, their head's down and they're snoring. It's not about the customer anymore. All it is about me, 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 me. The corporation is saying, how much more profits can we wring out? How much more profits can we change the formula and cut the cost? What can we do? How can we make this happen? This is what we see. Folks, you've got to understand, and you may be saying, Troy, what the Sam Hills has got to do with me? I'm in network marketing. Because you're going to hit every stage of this. This is a business cycle. And whether you're in the field and own your own business or whether you're the corporation and control the business, the same life cycle takes place. Here we go. This is the big one. Frustration is replaced with complacency. I see that in a company that I'm doing some consulting work with right now. And it's sad because I cannot get them to understand you're in the big rut. And if you don't get this taken care of and move backwards towards predictable success, there's going to be a problem. Now, there's a root for this. There's a reason this happens. Okay? And these are positive reasons that you see companies hit the big rut. Number one, they've become so good at what they do, they actually monopolize their whole niche. They are the king. And they've become complacent. The second reason is they're cash rich. We see a lot of this happen in the late 80s, early 90s with utility companies. They were growing. They had cutting edge. They had great technology coming out, but they were all cash happy because no matter if the economy's up or down, everybody pays their utility bills. All of a sudden, they became complacent, and a lot of them got bought up. A lot of them went out of business. It's sad. One of the other reasons is it's a family business, and I mentioned this before. And when that happens, all of a sudden that second or third generation are not the entrepreneurs. You know, I tease people all the time, and I make fun of the Donald. But did y'all realize that the Donald is second generation? See, he's one of those success stories where his dad built their empire on apartment buildings in some of the worst places in New York. I've got a good friend of mine, Mark Layton, who used to work for old man Trump. And the fun thing is seeing that Donald really liked what his dad did, but he had a bigger vision, said, we can do more than that. Dad, one of these days, we'll own the Empire State Building. Yeah, sure we do, son. We got all these slum buildings down here. Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, that's one of the things that I love. Now, if you look at the third generation of Trumps, you see that his two kids, especially the two biggest ones, Don Jr. and the beautiful young daughter that he's got, they're entrepreneurs all in their own right. She's got her own, I think, cosmetic line or jewelry line or something, and Donald Jr.'s taken over the business in a big way, doing a lot of the development at the golf courses and the entertainment. See, that's a family that is instilling the entrepreneurial spirit, but most times that doesn't happen. So how do you break through this? What do you do? Number one, an acquisition can pull a company out of that downhill spiral towards the death rattle. If you see your company out there and they're talking about acquisitions, I think it's good. I've got a company that I can't disclose right now that's either looking for venture capital or they're going to be looking putting themselves up for an acquisition. Either way, it is going to be a positive move from the corporate offices to the field force. It is a rock-solid deal because it's a good company. They just realized for them to expand, they've got to do this. See, that's a CEO and a founder that understands where they're going, understands what they're doing. When you get something like this, it's a rock-solid deal. You cannot go wrong that way when that happens, and I love it. Another way is right before your pending immediate collapse, somebody inside the organization wakes up from their deep slumber and realizes, man, if we're going to make this thing happen, we better go kick it up a notch. We got to do something. We're screwed. And they do something. Then there's what Les calls the lucky noodle. Somebody in the basement comes up with a harebrained idea. Actually, it would work. Sadly, what happens most of the time is they're terminated and they take that idea somewhere else. We've seen this a lot in the the manufacturers. You know, when you look at people like DeLorean and Iacocca, they had great ideas, but they got ousted from their company and sent somewhere else. Then another one that is sad, but this is most common, is when to get out of a big rut, if you're massive, if things are overwhelming, then what you've got to do is especially in a family run business, people have got to come together. You've got to go out there and you've got to say, you know what? We got to take the bull by the horn. We got to have a proxy. We got to pull this company out. And when you can pull a company out, you become the hero. You become that next generation leader that's going to take over. That's huge. Folks, most of the time this doesn't happen. Les talks about this. When you get into the big rut, you're done. I've seen so many top networkers jump in early. They get excited. They're into the... They get through the early struggle stage. They get into the fun stage, and they're having fun. Their volume is increasing beyond their wildest dreams. In 1 month, their check goes from $1,000 to $10,000. By the end of the year, they're not doing six figures in volume. They're doing seven figures in volume, and they're earning six figures in cash flow. They've bought the big house. They've paid off their debt, but now the debt's bigger because the house is bigger. They paid off their old cars and gave them to the kids, but now they're driving this sports car that they always dreamed of, and the payment's as much as their old house payment used to be. But it's okay because the volume's still growing, and they're excited, and they're pumping it up. A couple, 3 years down the road, all of a sudden they wake up one morning and realize in 30 days, volume dropped six figures. What happened? Very quickly, they look around and realize that a couple of their top leaders are now the founding distributors of a competing company, and they've been trained so well that they're starting that process all over again themselves. Within a 10-year period, not only are these people upside down financially, they've lost everything that they had because they couldn't afford it, and they're back to where they started 10 years ago. That's called the death rattle. Folks, if you don't want that, if you want to stay in predictable success in any of your organizations, I got an email today from somebody in England that listens to our show, and he's already changed some of his business around just from listening to us talk about Dondi Scamacci's book Career Move. So I'm really praying that this show, this predictable success with Les McCune, will help somebody turn their business around. Because at the end of the day, folks, this is what it's about. If you can listen, grab a nugget of information, go to these folks' websites, get into some of their coaching, do some stuff that's gonna help. You can tweak it, and within 30 days, instead of going downhill and dying, you start back up towards predictable success. Now, I know some of you on the show think, well, Troy, it's easy for you. You're so successful. And that just seems that way. So I go through the same things you do. I've got me a hot little Ford pickup truck that says 1995 Ford Ranger Sport on it. I like old cars. I got Paige a van. She's got a nice van down here for the kids. And you know what? It's also a 1990, although I've got to put a new air conditioner on it. Yeah, we live at the beach because we have decided this is the lifestyle that we want. Could we have brand new cars? You bet. I just don't want the bills. Could I have a gated community instead of living just a block off the beach and having fun with a half acre? Sure, and pay the payment. See, it's not about what you think a person has, because I go through the same struggles you are. I mean, I'm burning through cash left and right in a custody case right now. But here's the kicker. The difference is I've learned to live below my means. Folks, if you want to stay in predictable success, then you need to live one level below your means at all times. You need to be putting money into the bank, put money into savings, put money in an emergency fund. You don't go full-time in your network marketing business until your residual income, not your fast start bonus, not the recruiting bonus or whatever you call it, but your residual income replaced your current income for at least 6 months. That's when you go full-time. That's when you take it. My mentor, Wayne Hillman, who runs Life Force International, runs one of the only 100% pure debt-free companies. They own their office building outright. They own their manufacturing outright. They manufacture their products usually within a 14-day period for the most part. That's on the shelf. I learned from him to be conservative. If you live conservatively, you will live successfully. You will be able to do things that other people can't. Predictable Success is a book that will help you do that with your network marketing career without a shadow of a doubt. And tomorrow we're going to start looking at the death roll, going quietly into that good night. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to finish this up this week or next week in a way that you understand how you can gain back the fun, gain back the predictable success, and take your network marketing business, take your homespun business, take your brick-and-mortar business, and pass it on to a second generation who can gain predictable success. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. I look forward to seeing you here tomorrow morning on Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.